Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you very much for joining us. We're going to have on someone that actually said he likes Nate Buchanan. So
yeah, he did,
really
actually.
Excited about that.
But I'm going to do my job real quick because I didn't do it earlier.
Do it well.
The Border Patrol is presented by locally owned and operated Walker Uniform Service. For uniforms, industrial towels, mats, mops, and restroom products that enhance the look of your business, go to walkeruniform.com.
I have a story about this gentleman from when I was in college that could be serve as a lesson to any kids out there that might be listening.
Go ahead.
You never know who's going to be watching you and paying attention to what you're doing, so you need to be on your best behavior. Because when I was a senior in college, Wilt Chamberlain came back to Kansas University for the first time since he had been in college. And I was the sports director at the little student radio station. And I had the guts somehow to go up and do an interview with Wilt Chamberlain, in which I asked him to do a legal ID for the campus radio station against the wishes of my college professor. Said, that's so unprofessional. You cannot do that. But I had a game plan to it, and I was incredibly nervous. But I had done my research and found out that Wilt Chamberlain had worked at the campus radio station at KU when he was in college. And so instead of asking him all these questions that everybody else had asked him about coming back to KU for the first time, I asked him about his time at the campus radio station to soften him up, and I asked him to do an ID, and he did it. And 20 years later, 15 years later, whatever it was, Bob Dutton came up to me and said, you know, I saw you do that. He was the beat writer for Kansas basketball at the time. And said, you know what? I thought to myself, that kid's got a chance to do something in his career because he's got some guts.
And he was miserably wrong.
Bob Dutton, is that a true story, or has it been embellished by Nate Buchanan?
I think he's understating it. I mean, I remember he was nervous as heck. And but Wilt came there, and he had a big news conference there in the auditorium. And then they did a lot of one-on-ones with TV and us. And Nate waited until the end and went up there. And I watched him, and Wilt kind of looked at him and then did the station ID, or whatever you guys call it, and got it done.
Wow, Nate told the truth.
Yeah. I also remember Nate's first radio job, too. I mean, some of the things they had him doing. So that's that was impressive on a different level.
If I could survive a year with Brooks Melchior and 1250 The Game, Stephen, I feel like I could survive just about anything in this world. Mm-hmm. And I'll say another thing. I'm going down memory lane here, but when I was traveling with the Kansas City Royals, I was, you know, look, fresh-faced, trying to establish myself in this business, and Bob Dutton, I say this like in full respect. Very serious, you know, kind of like, you know, I don't know the best way to describe
it. No nonsense.
Not, you know,
from the likes of you.
Reporter, you know, covering the Royals, knew what he was doing, and I was kind of trying to figure things out. And the Royals were god-awful at that time, and we had just, as a radio station, spent a ton of money on the radio rights, and they were sending me out there, and all of a sudden, I'm worried for my job because I'm like, man, our radio station's losing all this money on the radio rights. They've made this financial commitment to send me on the road. And Buddy Bell is calling me into his office to basically air me out for everything that everybody else at the radio station is saying about his miserable baseball team. And I was feeling really, really worried about my job. And I remember it was in Chicago. We were playing the White Sox. The Royals were playing the White Sox. We were there. And I sit down at dinner, and I'll be honest, Bob, the last person I thought that would say like, hey pal, are you all right, was Bob Dutton. And I sat down at dinner one night, and out of nowhere, Bob just said to me, hey man, are you all right? Are you doing okay? And I just want you to know, Bob, like, it caught me off guard at that time. It was a simple little question, But that made me feel so much better at a time when I really needed that from somebody. And I want you to know that I really appreciate that all these years. That was 14 years ago, probably. And all these years later, I really appreciate that little gesture that you made.
Well, I'll give you an example. I mean, it just goes in cycles. I'm old enough that I covered the series when the Washington Bullets beat the 76ers back in 78, I guess, in the Eastern Finals. And this was the year, 77, 78, somewhere back there. And this was the year that they had lost to Portland, I think, in the previous finals. The 76ers had lost to Portland the previous year in the finals. And they had basically had an off-season commercial campaign where Julius Erving promised a title. And we were in Landover at the Capitol Center or whatever it was called then. And I went in after the Bullets eliminated the 76ers, and it was just a quiet locker room. And I'm like you, Nate, I was young. I was like 21 or something, 22. And went up to Erving. No one else said anything. I said, Doc, you know, there are going to be people who are going to say that you and George McGinnis can't play with each other after this. What do you say back to them? And Julius just looked at me like he was going to take my head off, and he took these deep breaths, and I'm thinking, well, here we go. And Ralph Bernstein, the old AP reporter, old to me, in Philadelphia, looked at him and said, it's a good question, Doc, answer it. And then Doc calmed down, answered the question, and I thought, from then on, that's the way it works.
Wow. Wow.
That's an awesome story. So update us, catch us up to date on what you're doing now up in Seattle, as we read your Twitter bio, pretty much retired.
Pretty much.
But you still contribute on the radio and do freelance work. So tell us what's life like in Seattle.
Not too much. There's a good friend of mine up here who has a local radio station right here in Tacoma. And I talk to him every Friday morning. And it's just like two of us talking. I mean, I don't know how many people are listening to it, but it's. And I write a column/blog or whatever it is for the paper's for the station's website a couple times a week. And I don't know how long that's going to go. I mean, it keeps me attached to it right now. But yeah, I really do feel retired. It's nothing like the daily grind it was before.
So the Seattle Mariners, obviously, are playing the Royals this weekend. And that's mm-hmm. one of the reasons why we had you on. You covered both teams. And so I wanted to ask you about Seattle, because I've found it fascinating that, because we have these discussions about what's going on with the American League and who's in and who's out, because we're trying to figure out who the Royals are who they're going to trade with as they're looking to rebuild this organization. And so then when Robinson Cano gets hurt and gets suspended, I feel like most people wrote the Mariners off, but boy, they really took off after losing Cano, which surprised some people, and made a trade with Tampa. And here they are in a real good position to claim one of those wild card spots. So watching the Mariners and the knowledge that you have of the organization, what was your reaction, and what's your reaction been to how well they've played and how they've taken off since losing Cano?
Well, their pitching, particularly their starting pitching, has been much better than most people anticipated. I mean, when Robbie went out, and then he was going to be out for a while anyway, and then the suspension hit, and it's going to be 80 games, it's not going to be back till August. Their offense has gone down. It's last time I checked, they were down about a run of games since Cano went out. It's just that their pitching has been, you know, much better than they expected. Also, they've been, you got to say, they've been lucky. I mean, they're 8-0, I think, in extra inning games. They've won 25 one-run games. And so, you know, those averages, you know, they don't hold. I mean, now, they don't always even out in the same season. But, I mean, but it's they've had a lot of good things happen to him. But the lineup doesn't have any automatic outs in it. The bullpen's pretty deep, and the rotation has been better than they expected. Now, yeah, I think they're, what, 7 games up in the wild card right now, but there's a long way to go. You guys remember back in 2003, I think the Royals had a 7.5 game lead in the division at the All-Star break.
Mm-hmm.
And it went away in a hurry.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about the one. I was looking at their run differential. It backs up the stuff you said. I think they're only plus 14 on the year, and they're 20-some games over 500. But my perspective on this changed a little bit, Bob, when I saw the Royals in 14 and 15, because I do think some teams are better positioned to win one-run games the Royals had that fantastic bullpen, and they had guys that could manufacture a run here or there because they had so many fast guys and guys that were putting the ball in play that if they got into a close game late, you kind of like their chances because they weren't going to give up a run with their bullpen and they could just go make a run happen. Are you seeing any element? You mentioned the bullpen. Are you seeing elements of that? Are they good at winning one-run games, or is it more like you said, are they just getting kind of lucky right now?
Well, I mean, they've been good at winning one-run games. I mean, the numbers are what the numbers are, Nate. I mean, that's, now their closer's been terrific. Edwin Diaz has 30 saves, and I think I'm pulling this off the top of my head. I forget what it is, but they're like 21-0 when they give him a one-run lead. I mean, he's been really good. I mean, he doesn't have a lot of easy saves. This team is set up to win with the bullpen, and it's been hit and miss in the setup guys. Juan Nicasio, who's at Pittsburgh the last couple of years, has been okay. Alex Colome, since he came over in the trade from Tampa Bay. Look, he had terrific numbers over the last 3 years at Tampa Bay, and he's been hit or miss. I mean, but if they can get the game to Diaz, then they've been set.
Are they done as far as making any trades before the trade deadline?
No, I don't. Jerry DePoto, I mean, he's the Jedi, is what they call him, the Jedi trade master. And they'll be doing something. Whether it will be a big impact thing or not, I don't know. I don't see any obvious holes with them, they need an X. I don't see that. I would guess they'll try to bolster the bullpen. There's some thought that they're trying to add to the rotation. But look, and you guys saw this with the Royals in 14-15. I mean, you don't when you're in contention, you don't trade guys off your major league roster. And two, the Mariners don't have a whole lot of stuff in their farm system. They don't have anything at all at the upper levels. I mean, any trade, it would be for like an A-ball guy down.
We're visiting with Bob Dutton. He covered the Kansas City Royals for some time here in Kansas City and has been covering the Seattle Mariners since. And I'm curious about the fan base in Seattle, Bob, because at one time, when they opened Safeco Field and they had Ichiro in his prime, it seemed like, you know, the Seattle Mariners and Safeco Field was the place to be in Seattle. But then they kind of went through a rough patch. The Seattle Sounders, when I've been up there, seem like they've kind of taken the city by storm in many ways and maybe taken some of the momentum away. Are the fans coming back now? Are they rallying around this team considering how great of a season they're having?
Well, I think you're seeing some of that. I mean, it's you say a rough patch. Nate, they now hold the title of being the franchise in North America, the pro franchise in North America with the longest streak without a postseason appearance. They haven't been in postseason since 2001. So it's
wow.
I mean, people in Kansas City know what that's like. I mean, there's a hardcore base, but if you don't win, and if you don't win for an extended period, then it takes a hit. Seahawks have been very good. Now it looks like they may be turning down, but you know they've been Super Bowl winner a couple years ago, and they've been a contender the last several years. Yeah, and the Sounders are a big hit up here. I mean, that league is a big deal up here in the Northwest with the Sounders, Portland, and Vancouver.
So there was a few tweets last night, and I was asking you about the Mariners, whether or not they're going to make another trade before the trade deadline. There were several tweets last night that there's a lot of buzz that the Rangers have decided they're going to trade Cole Hamels and maybe close to a deal. And I saw you'd retweet that maybe the Mariners could be linked to him. Do you think that's a real possibility?
Well, the tweet that I saw came from J.P. Morosi, John works now. He works everywhere. I mean, MLB Network. I mean, I think he was at Fox. I think he's still there. I don't worry. But anyway, but J.P.'s fairly tied in. So, I mean, this is a legitimate reporter and a source and he said that they are. I don't know. I don't see an easy match. I mean, now one of the things that links Hamels to the Mariners is that he has a lengthy no trade clause in his contract. The Mariners aren't on it, so I mean the Rangers could just trade him without getting his approval.
We're visiting with Bob Dutton. Bob, I'm curious just your thoughts on the Kansas City Royals as they look like they're barreling toward 100 losses. You covered some of those teams. I don't have to remind you here in Kansas City. Are you, just since you left, to see them go all the way to the World Series and now fall all the way back down to where they are, I'm just kind of curious what your reaction has been to all that.
Well, when I left after 13, right before, you know, they went to postseason. And look, in 13, you could see they were coming. They got to the final weekend of the season. In fact, they got eliminated out here at Safeco. I mean, that was the year the Indians pulled a lot of games out of their ear. And I can remember that. The Indians were, like, down 3 runs to the White Sox, I think, and scored 4 in the ninth. And the 4 went up on the scoreboard right before the first pitch out here. I think it was like a Tuesday night or something, and you could just see the bench deflate. I mean, and they missed out on the playoffs, but you know that year, you know, by a couple of games. But you could see that team was coming together. And here's something, you know, I talked to friends in Kansas City. I still don't think they appreciate this. Since the strike in '94, what other small market team has won the World Series? It's an amazing achievement.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a lot of teams have gotten there or been a threat to get there or. A couple teams, you know, small market teams have gotten to the World Series. The Royals, I think, are the only ones who you legitimately say are a small market team that won it. It's an astounding accomplishment. I don't think they get enough credit for it yet.
So you're talking about covering the NBA earlier in your career. So when you look back at all the different jobs you've had and the teams you've covered, what stands out to you maybe? What was your most enjoyable gig?
Oh, I mean, to a large extent, all of it. I mean, even when the Royals were not very good, I got paid to go to Major League Baseball games. I mean, how do you top that? I mean, I always said, I mean, look, I'm retired now, more or less. If I got to work, I can't think of a better job to have. I mean, I got paid to go to Major League Baseball games, travel around the country. I mean, that's terrific. If you're asking the best single assignment I ever had, though, it was covering Kansas, Kansas in the Aloha Bowl. Kansas and Kansas State in the Aloha Bowl. I mean, that's a week in Hawaii, and it's at a time when you know it's a non-major bowl game. The paper didn't want a whole lot of stuff. I mean, so you had most of the day to yourself in Waikiki. It doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah, that sounds all right. I was mad at the time. I was a college student at that time, and I was like, man, the one time Kansas makes a bowl game in my life and it's in Hawaii, I can't get there, you know? But if I'd gotten paid to do it, that would have been pretty incredible.
Oh, yeah, it was the best assignment I've ever had.
So, Bob, you're the person that taught me this phrase, and I've used it a million times since then, and I don't know where you got it, but you told me when I first started traveling with the Royals, the best thing about Major League Baseball is there's a game every day. The worst thing about baseball is there's a game every day. It does become a grind. Did that grind ever get to you, though, that relentlessness of the 162-game schedule?
Well, I mean, every season's a long season, but it's a baseball, covering baseball on a daily basis, more than unlike anything else I've ever covered. Baseball is a lifestyle. And it's a fabulous job. So I mean, but you know, even when you're at home, I mean, you don't see your family because I mean, you know, your schedule is off. I mean, that's I'd get home, my wife would be in bed. I mean, asleep. I mean, when she woke up, I was next to her, but I was asleep. By the time I woke up, she was gone. By the time she got home, I had left for the park. So that's what it's like at home. So it's a grind in that sense, but look, I still come back to it. I mean, you get paid to go to watch Major League Baseball. How do you top that?
No, you can't. I mean, hey, we think about how thankful we are every day just to be able to get on the radio and talk about sports and have fun and laugh with friends. And so, we're all blessed in a different way to make our living talking about and writing about sports. I'm with you. I agree with that.
Hey, with the Royals now, I think the road back is harder now than it was before. I mean, I see what they're trying to do. I'll be interested to see if they can pull it off. But before, you know, some of the avenues they have where they could overspend in the Caribbean or overdraft, draft Will Myers in the third round, paying first round money. You can't do that now. I think it's much tougher now to rebuild as a small market team. And there's still a difference. I mean, there's still a difference between small and larger markets. I mean, it's not what it was in the 90s, but it's still there.
Yeah, I'm glad you made that point, Bob. I've talked about that a lot. When that when that ruling changed in the CBA, I talked to a lot of people in the Royals front office, and they put on a happy face, and they didn't want to acknowledge it publicly anyway. But I thought, you know, this goes under the radar, but this is how the Royals built this team. Mm-hmm. They spent more money than anybody else in the draft. They were investing heavily in Latin America, and now that avenue is not there. The only way you can spend more than other people in the draft now is to be terrible, is to lose a lot of games and lose free agents, and then you get compensatory picks that you can spend more money. And that's what they did. That, you know, they had five first-day picks in this draft. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what you think. I think it's a real problem for Major League Baseball, the way that it's encouraging teams to tank, you know, for extended periods of time.
Well, there are some fan bases that won't handle it. And for years, I was talking to you earlier, Allard Barrett or Dayton, they had to at least try to put a team on the field that would at least win 70-some games. Now, they weren't always successful at doing that. But, I mean, they didn't feel they could that they could tank. Now, maybe that has changed because, look, when you win a title, you build up some goodwill that lasts for a while. I don't know how long it lasts, but it lasts for a while. But I don't know. I mean, that's and not all tanking works. Right. Now the Astros, it's really clicked, and I don't know that you can really look at the Cubs because the Cubs have a lot of money. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Cubs did some of that too, but the Cubs have a lot of money. But the Astros are, I don't want to say they're small market, but they're like in the Cardinals range, that mid market level, and they did tank and they lost a lot of games for three or four years, but their guys clicked, and that doesn't always happen.
All right, Bob. So were you? I know, like you said, you're mostly retired. So will you actually go to any of the Royals and Mariners games and watch your two former worlds collide this weekend?
I probably will. If nothing else, I'll see it on television. But yeah, I would imagine I'll get up to Safeco at some point.
Well, I'm looking. I hope Seattle. Hope Seattle makes the playoffs. I didn't realize it had been that long.
Yeah, man,
it's been a while.
Yeah,
2001, and that's the year they won. You know, that won the 116 games. You know, set the American League record. That's the 9/11 really shut that team down. They were rolling, and they weren't the same after they came back in September.
Wow. Well, hey Bob, it's really good to hear your voice again, man. I mean, we spent a lot of time together those years that I was, you know, traveling with the Royals, and even going back to the time you were covering the Kansas Jayhawks. And I still enjoy following you on Twitter and all that stuff. And I hope you're enjoying retirement. But thanks for getting up a little early and talking to us.
All right, guys, take care.
Thank you, Bob. That's Bob Dutton talking about the Royals and the Mariners coming up this weekend. So. A really good team against a really bad team. But
it's funny how the tables right. have turned in that regard.
Jake, very confused and a little unnerved. He was under the impression that he had booked Bob Sutton on the show. Mm. And so he just handed me a list of Chiefs defensive questions to ask him. And I said, what the hell's going on? Well, you know, hey, I finally got him.
Yep.
I finally got Bob Sutton.
I wondered why he wrote down
right.
for me, ask him why Justin Houston keeps dropping into coverage. Yeah,
asked,
like, what is Bob Dutton
about Marcus
say about
Peters.
That?
See what he has to say. And so then
ask him why he still has a job.
I was wondering why he kept.
Well, he doesn't. He's retired.
In my ear, he kept telling me. Ask about Marcus Peters. Wasn't, you know,
yeah, MP double D's.
Is that why Jake got so excited when he heard that he was retired? Oh, Bob Sutton's retired?
What? Yes. Oh, it's Bob Dutton, Jake.
Dutton, Jake. Back after this on WHB.